I'm Kevin Bixby, Executive Director of the Southwest Environmental Center and your host for today's program, which was pre-recorded. Our listeners may have heard about what happened in Wisconsin, the massacre of gray wolves. There's no other word for it, that took place last week. In response to a lawsuit by a Kansas hunting group, out-of-state hunting group, the state was forced to offer a rushed hunt of wolves in the dead of winter. It started on Monday and ended on Tuesday with more than 200 wolves being killed officially. And that amounts to about 20% of the state's wolf population killed in 3 days. On today's show, we're going to dive into the details of what happened, why this massacre was allowed to occur, and what it says about the state of wildlife management in America. Our guests today are two wildlife advocates based in Wisconsin who have been following wolf issues in that state for many years. Melissa Smith is the executive director of Friends of the Wisconsin Wolf and Wildlife. Adrian Treves, who's been on the show before, is a professor and founder of the Carnivore Coexistence Lab at the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be back.
I know things are crazy in the Badger State, and I really appreciate that you have made time today to be on the show. Melissa, let's start with you.
Sure.
People all over the country are in shock, disbelief, and now in mourning over the slaughter of these wolves. Can you explain to our listeners what exactly happened?
Well, we can start kind of at the beginning. I think, Kevin, it's up to you to talk about maybe delisting, but wolves were delisted in November. Wisconsin had planned a fall hunt, which we were, you know, working on and trying to get, you know, within work on transparency and democracy within the agency. But as you said, a Kansas-based, I'm going to go into that just a little bit because that's a little bit deceptive. From the media, well, maybe I just should, but essentially they sued the state of Wisconsin demanding that a Wisconsin wolf hunt take place immediately. When I say there's a little bit going into that Kansas state-based group, the group's called Hunter Nation. Just happens to be their office is located in Kansas, but they are a nationwide organization that advocates for guns, God, and hunting rights. And I'm not kidding, that's literally what it says on their website. But they are also a subgroup of something called that maybe your listeners probably know or should definitely get to know of Americas for Prosperity and from ALEC, which are large Koch brother-backed lobbying organizations. So it isn't just a small trophy hunter group. This was a national attack on endangered species, on wolves here in Wisconsin, and has kind of been going on politically in the state, not only with wolves, but with mining issues here. So that's kind of the background of who started this circuit court to demand this hunting season. And it went to the Natural Resource Board and the agency, the DNR agency. And I'm going to let Adrian speak to that and how they came up with this 200 number, but decided rubber stamped a 200 wolf quota for a hunt and to be hunted in any way imaginable. And where you were just discussing grief, Kevin, I think that's a lot of where we're coming from. 89% of our wolves that were killed with dogs. So we are the only state in the nation. Actually, man, we're only this Wisconsin and Kazakhstan are the only places in the world you can use dogs to hunt wolves. And it's state-sanctioned dog fighting. It was also allowed at night and on snowmobile. By any way, I meant a night vision. I mean, just seeing the videos, of course, that's part of my job. Certainly my heart hurts and a lot of people in Wisconsin heart hurt. And it's an abomination. We are in shock over what just happened. Luckily, the Ojibwe were able to claim 81 of those wolves. But unfortunately, yes, that mattered. But we went over and we went over quota by 55%. So instead of only being 119 wolves legally allowed to be killed, the DNR let 219 wolves die and die at the hands of our Wisconsin hounding groups. So
much to unpack there.
Yeah, there really is.
What does it mean to hunt wolves with dogs?
Well, what they do is, it's really been another powerful force in Wisconsin, is we have a large bear hunting community. As a matter of fact, people travel from all over the United States to hunt bears in Wisconsin with hounds. And I think that's a really great question, and one that I wish more people in the media would ask, is I think they have this idea of, you know, maybe a bird dog or working alongside your owner. That is not what hound hunting is. And for bears, you might be able to push a big bear or small bears up a tree. But essentially, it's people in trucks putting radio collars on dogs who have been trained with captive penning. So they've already learned how to fight and kill wildlife, and let loose on our public and private lands. And while they sit in the car with radio collars, and they can let six out at a time per license. So these guys get together in huge groups. Now, when you let a dog fight a wolf pack, you're going to end in conflict, in violent conflict. And this is the same group of people who have been complaining that their dogs have been being killed during bear training season. I think I will turn some of that over to Adrian, because he was involved in an expert witness in a lawsuit Wisconsin tried to stop this use of dogs versus the wolf hunt. So maybe I could turn that over to Adrian so he could tell you exactly what hunting wolves with dogs really is.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Melissa. So it traditionally in the past, the hounds were trained in July and August, and they were supposed to be released so they could practice following the scent of their quarry, which in the past, legally, the only quarries were coyote, raccoon, bobcat, but now also wolves. And as Melissa alluded to, because wolves and coyotes can't climb, when they're pursued by hounds, we're not actually sure what happens, because these hunters don't report any useful data on the interactions. We can't verify that the hounds are not getting into fights with wolves, which is illegal according to the animal welfare laws of our state. We just can't determine if they are, but it's likely that the hounds are fighting with the wolves, and both parties are getting injured in those fights. Almost certainly the wolves are suffering worse, because a pack of six hounds released into their territory is on average going to outnumber the wolf pack, which averages about four in our region. It's going to outnumber it by 150%. So I pity the wolves that these hounds are loosed on. And there's no obligation for the hunter to be there or to be the one who pulls the trigger. And we have minimal enforcement, because the DNR has not invested enough in enforcement against poaching or against animal fighting. So it's very much the Wild West out there. And the groups that do this are also practicing intimidation and harassment of people who try to observe what they're doing or try to investigate what they're doing.
Oh, my. So, and you mentioned that the people that got these wolf tags were also allowed to hunt at night using snowmobiles. And of course, this is in the wintertime in northern Wisconsin with snow on the ground. So easy to track wolves, hard for them to get away, especially with someone in a snowmobile. Is that correct? I mean, were all these methods allowed, Melissa?
Not only were they allowed, but they were used. So we do have the data. I think I just about fell out of my chair when I found out, you know, that the majority of our wolves were taken this way. I mean, this was organized. This wasn't like, oh, I guess we get to go out. They knew this was coming. They planned it. They have been, Wisconsin also, as soon as wolves were delisted, allows training. So what, training your dog on a wolf, there are no rules. No rules. You can do it 24 hours a day at night for training. And if you could see me, I would be putting that word training in quotes. It's essentially the same thing, only the wolf doesn't die at the end legally. But this is also a group that is known, you know, when Adrian said we don't know that they fight, we see the videos. We have the videos. They're posted. So while it's not legal, the Wisconsin DNR said that they were going to have regulation and enforcement to be self-appointed by these very same people who were killing our wolves. I think that one could argue that if these were responsible hunters, they would have stopped when they knew we were over quota. And in fact, that only hyped them up more to bring out more dogs and more people. So really a disgusting, bloody, and violent week we had here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, if I could add to that, Melissa's, I think, 100% right. And I have a message for the ethical and responsible hunters out there. We don't know where you are. You cannot circle the wagons with these people because it'll be the downfall of ethical hunting if you do. It's time to stand up and say this is unacceptable.
Oh, we're going to come back. I want to talk about the politics of all this, and especially, you know, including what was the response within the sportsman, as we say, community. But I want to go back a little bit to the lawsuit that precipitated all this. Who is this group? Well, you talked about who Hunter Nation is. It's a Koch brother supported group. And I believe Ted Nugent is on their board, the rabid gun advocate. And so how could the lawsuit, how could they prevail? How could they force the state of Wisconsin to offer this hunt when it didn't really want to, at least not in the time frame that it was imposed on them?
I can give you my hunch. I can't 100% prove that yet, but we, you know, the lawsuit was filed in Jefferson County, a very conservative county, a county without any wolves, a county where the Luke Heigelman, who is the executive director, lived for a while and was the chief of staff for the Republican minority or majority leader, Fitzgerald, for a while. So I have my feelings that this was probably planned. Again, I can't prove that that is the case. And that we know that the judge is a hunter. We know that he hunts with the chief of police. So really, this is a well-connected organization. So this wasn't just getting into the politics of that. This decision was appealed. And even now, the attorneys are still scrambling to figure out what happened, because a loophole where the judge did not officially close the case did not allow the DNR to appeal. So we lost that appeal, and it went directly to this hunt. So there's a lot of things at play, including the politics of this. And, you know, we are a republic. It started with a legislative hearing that was closed to the public by a legislator, a senator from northern Wisconsin, who also happens to be a bear hounder and has also received depredation payments for dead dogs due to wolves. I think this was a coordinated effort, that no one knew was happening. And if anything, at least we know now just what the wolf hate is capable of in this state. I don't know if Adrian has more to add to that with the court ruling.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the court proceedings, because I was surprised at the lack of science that was brought to bear on the issue by our DNR, for one thing. This is the first time Wisconsin's ever held a wolf hunt in January or February, because the three previous regulated wolf hunting seasons all ended in December, before the heavy snows fell, before the mating and pair bonding season for the wolves that's so critical to their reproduction. So we really, since this was the first time ever in 2021, we really have no idea what impact it's going to have on the population. It's also interrupted our annual wolf census, so we have no idea of how many wolves survived the fight. We can basically throw out any data that precedes this hunting season. It's valueless data, because we don't know which of those wolves counted were killed, and which ones are actually going to be disrupted out of their home ranges and be seen elsewhere if they survived at all. And none of these factors were mentioned in the court case. On top of that, we have a serious problem that people think the legal reported kill is no problem, because for every one of those legally reported wolf kills, there may be multiple illegal kills. Our research has shown that poaching, and particularly cryptic poaching, the shoot, shovel, and shut up kind, where people conceal evidence or criminals conceal evidence, that kind can rival the legal killing. So it's possible that 400 to 500 wolves were killed. And then you have to factor in the lack of reproduction for all of those alpha male and alpha females whose mating season was disrupted. So any pro-hunters who care about science out there, these extreme hunters who succeeded in getting this February wolf hunt may have jeopardized your legal statutory wolf hunt in November 2021. So I suggest a broad coalition that's concerned with science and public policy ethics should be raising up their voices along with us.
Well, we'll come back to that. We have to take a short break right now, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Kevin Bixby, and my guests today are Adrian Treves and Melissa Smith, both from Wisconsin. We're talking about the wolf massacre that took place in Wisconsin last week and the politics behind it. And just before the break, Adrian, you were talking about the impacts on wolves and how, you know, the official reported toll of wolves killed is probably just only a fraction of the real number, because a lot of wolves are going to be killed illegally. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so we've shown from prior research that every time wolves are delisted and the rules protecting them under the Endangered Species Act are loosened, illegal killing skyrockets. And a lot of the poaching, what we call poaching, it involves a further crime. It's the destruction of radio transmitters and the destruction of taxpayer supported equipment for monitoring these wolves. So there's a sort of a double crime going on here. The wildlife poaching is bad enough, but also we're losing information and material that taxpayers paid for. Often federal money was used to pay for those radio collars, because wolves were federally listed under the Endangered Species Act as recently as January 3rd, 2021. So on top of that, you've got a high rate of poaching that follows legal killing and is not well measured or well counted. We've shown that every wolf population in the lower 48 states, the state and federal agencies have been undercounting poaching. They've been dismissing it as if it weren't important, and therefore often misidentifying the primary threat to wolf populations. So in this case, illegal killing is the major cause of mortality in every wolf population in the country, whether it's the delisted gray wolves or the endangered red wolves or the endangered Mexican gray wolves. We've been publishing on those too, some of which are in New Mexico and Arizona.
Right, right here in the Gila region. Yeah. So Adrian, you mentioned that gray wolves in Wisconsin and everywhere, in many places. In Wisconsin, for sure, they were protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act. And, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth. They've been taken off the list and put back on after groups have sued. It's very political. Wolves in the Northern Rockies were protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act until
2011.
There was a writer in Congress that simply, you know, circumvented the entire administrative process of that goes into listing wolves or determining whether they should be delisted. It's all short-circuited by a writer on a budget bill. But wolves in Wisconsin were protected under the federal act until this last month, in January of this year of 2021. And one of the final acts of the Trump administration was to remove those protections. So Melissa, you said that you think this whole lawsuit was, it had been in the works, it had been planned for a while. I assume that's because people could see that delisting was coming down the pike. And
absolutely.
I understand there's a law in the books in Wisconsin that requires, if wolves are delisted, that there be a wolf hunt. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we have a law that mandates a wolf hunt. So when wolves are delisted, we are mandated to hunt them. And the DNR saw that in November, that wolves were going to be delisted. You know, there's the 60-day period. So they got together and said, the DNR, and said, okay, we're moving forward with a wolf hunt for the fall. And that wasn't good enough for this Hunter Nation group. They wanted this wolf hunt immediately. They wanted it. And they have so much as said, it is written. I mean, they've talked to the media. They are afraid that wolves will be relisted under the Biden administration. It's our opinion, and I think the opinion of most people and scientists, that the Trump administration delisted wolves in Wisconsin and actually across the entire nation illegally. It was an illegal delisting, not using best available science, not even using democracy, frankly. So I think that when these groups, you know, America's Prosperity, Hunter Nation, saw that it was going to be in the fall, I think they knew and had a pretty good idea based on the Humane Society's lawsuit and the fact that on day one, Biden said they would review wolf delisting, made them act very quickly and pretty ferociously with this emergency, which they called emergency hunt, because they wanted to kill as many wolves as they can in any way they could before they were relisted.
Well, that raises an interesting point. Why do people hunt wolves to begin with? And I mean, nobody eats wolves. Correct me if I'm wrong. So what motivates people to go out and want to kill wolves, especially with this sort of this vengeance? Adrian, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, we've measured some of the answers to your questions come out of the surveys of public attitudes we've done. So in particular, people who use hounds to hunt bears and coyotes and bobcats were resentful of wild wolves, because when the hounds cross their territories, the wolves reasonably perceive them as trespassers and get into territorial battles with them. And that's probably avoidable, but not much effort has been made on any side to avoid it. Instead, for a long time, the bear hunters claimed exorbitant compensation payments of up to $2,500 for each hound, and they got vet bills covered if a hound was only injured. So they held this strong resistance for wolves. But let me point out that hounding, the way we've described it, is extremely unpopular in the general public. And it's a very tiny, narrow minority of the hunters community that does this practice. So this super narrow minority interest group has been pushing and pushing and using political pressure and now lawsuits to get their way to hunt in this very strange, brutal fashion and decimate a wolf population that belongs to the broad public. And I should add another group that should be up in arms about this. It's the livestock owners around Wisconsin, because the hunters have basically just played a game of whack-a-mole. There's going to be stragglers and loners from all these packs that have been torn to shreds, leaving some survivors wandering, looking around, and they're going to go for the most predictable and easy food sources on the landscape. That's going to be livestock. I predict a doubling or tripling of the rate of livestock loss because of this February wolf hunt and wolves moving around the landscapes, seen in places people have never seen them before. Unfortunately, a lot of the public is going to call for more wolf killing, which is exactly the opposite of what we need now to protect livestock and protect pet safety and so forth.
So, Melissa, what Adrian said that this was a folks that do this are a tiny fraction of hunters. What is the position of the hunting community to this wolf hunt or to wolf hunting in general, but where do mainstream hunting groups stand? Do they speak out against it?
You know, I just want to backtrack a little bit when you were asking about the motivation. You know, they're hunted for sport. Wolves are hunted for sport, or because I don't find any value. And most hunters probably don't, but I really can't speak on behalf of mainstream hunters because frankly, I can't find any anymore. And that sounds extreme to say. It really does. And of course, yeah, I can name off, you know, five or six people that I think are like that. But I think the whole motivation and sociology movement has been this movement. People are not hunting anymore. So I think what we're seeing is a lot of leftover people that are on the extremes. Either, you know, they're just hunting a deer or they're not hunting at all. Or it's these egregious forms and trapping, and there's no tradition in this. It isn't about spending time with your family. This is about thrill killing and blood sport. And I think that's what we've seen in Wisconsin. As the number of hunters here decline, for whatever reason, you can, I know the mainstream hunters and the DNR like to say it's because we're spending all our time on our smartphones, but I think it's just a change in cultural value. And I think we value wildlife alive more than we value it dead. You know, I'm a non-hunter, non-consumptive user. So are 89% of the people in Wisconsin, and we're a huge hunting state. So I think it's time to maybe look at not what do mainstream hunters say, what do the rest of us have to say? And the rest of us have to say enough is enough. We don't want wolf hunting here, and we don't want trophy hunting.
Yeah, well, that, okay, let's look into that. And I agree with you, I mean, the majority of public does not hunt, and the majority of the public approves of hunting for food, but not these types of just using animals as target practice. So why are they allowed? Why doesn't the majority of public prevail in wildlife decision making? How do laws like the law in Wisconsin that requires wolves to be hunted once they're delisted, how do those kinds of laws get passed? Adrian, you want to take a stab at that?
I'll take a stab at one side of that and then hand the baton to Melissa, I think, who knows more about the political process. I'd say that the Act 169 that passed in the Wisconsin legislature in April 2012 that mandated a wolf hunting season might by itself not be so egregious, except for the inclusion of hounding and trapping. And at the time, it had nighttime hunting. Okay, so it had some egregious aspects to it. But the very fact that they passed a statute allowing hunting of wolves doesn't strike me as so extreme and revolutionary. But I think what was extreme and revolutionary is the quotas that they allowed. You know, if quotas were like 10 wolves could be killed legally, there would be much less outcry. But instead, the quotas tend to be 20 times higher than that. And then they overshoot the quota and they don't enforce against poaching or these blood sports. That's what makes Wisconsin an extreme case. I don't know if you see it the same way, Melissa.
I do. And, you know, and I think it is something, you know, that it's getting more nationwide attention. I agree. The only thing that was extreme about the passing of Act 169 is they did it after midnight in a secret meeting on the day wolves were delisted. Back in 2011. So there was really, I mean, even they didn't even consult the Wisconsin wildlife biologist. They didn't even consult Adrian Whiteven when they did it. They just went ahead and did it because they had Scott Walker and Republican majority. So when, you know, they just pushed that through, there was no debate. There was a quick vote on it. Honestly, a lot of the Democrats here voted for that too, although we're in the minority. So that passed through quickly. You know, going in, we could go on for this forever, but this is also a very heavily gerrymandered state. So we do have, we've got our work cut out for us to try to make this somewhat even on the political spectrum from our values matching how we choose to manage wildlife. And that reflects right to our Natural Resource Board and who they appoint in the administration with the Department of Natural Resources. We are still feeling the effects of the Walker administration on Wisconsin DNR, especially that Natural Resource Board we were just talking about is heavily Republican and heavily trophy hunter oriented. So we've got our work cut out for us.
Okay, we have to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about the politics and democracy or lack thereof in wildlife governance. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Kevin Bixby, and my guests today are Adrian Treves and Melissa Smith. They are both Wisconsin wildlife advocates. And we're talking about the wolf hunt that took place last week in Wisconsin and what it means, what it reveals about not just Wisconsin politics, but the state of wildlife management in the United States today. So before the break, we were talking about so many things. We were talking about how the law was passed that mandated that the state hold a wolf hunt if wolves lost federal protection, and that was passed in the dead of night by the Wisconsin legislature back in 2011, I think you said, Melissa. So how did the politics fall on these wildlife issues? Is this strictly Republicans supporting wolf hunting and Democrats are opposed, or what's the story?
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily all or nothing. I think there's probably a mix, but if you ever notice, it seems to be those who run on fear or ignorance seem to scream the loudest. And I mean that with all due respect. We saw that on a national stage. We saw an insurrection at the Capitol, right? Like on our national Capitol. With the wolf hunt, and maybe why it feels so partisan, is that you've got, particularly conservative groups, the Farm Bureau, the NRA, the, Safari Club International, who are donating a lot of money to conservative candidates, and you've got then their constituents who don't understand the wolf or enjoy trophy hunting or feel a threat to their livelihood, of why it's become so partisan. I think a big part of the reason that the Democrats just don't seem, as involved or as passionate is a lack of education. And that is where, that's our responsibility to get that information to them. You know, just like when I was describing hounding earlier in the program, people believe it's, from an old book where you take your old hound out and, it seems fair when we know the reality is electronics and night hunting and training to be vicious. They don't really know that. It's kind of that same thing where, one of our big pushes is to stop using words like harvest a wolf. You're not harvesting a wolf, you're killing a wolf. And so a lot of these euphemisms, the Democrats essentially most are from urban areas. They don't know what's going on out there. So they hear wolf hunt and they equal that to a deer hunt. They hear hunting with dogs and they equal that to, you going out pheasant hunting with your companion that sleeps next to you by your bed. So I think a lot of it is making sure that Democrats know that, they kind of see it almost as a rural issue and they need votes and they've got to win statewide votes. So yeah, sure, hunt wolves so that I can show, even though let's say I'm from a progressive city like Madison, Tammy Baldwin, for example, she can say, oh, sure, I support a wolf hunt because it just doesn't seem to be that big of a deal for her. She's not going to lose her urban voters over it and she's going to pick up rural voters. So I don't even necessarily think that they even care about the issue or know about the issue. It's a way to unite, those urban and rural areas when you're trying to get Democrat votes.
What do you think, Adrian?
I'd like to jump in on that. I only somewhat agree with Melissa, which is fun. So this isn't going to be all kumbaya here. I don't think I can do much more in educating even Democrats. I've done as much as I could to get the best available science out there in the media and in front of policymakers. and it just doesn't seem to be having traction. So let me give you an example. The Obama administration tried to delist gray wolves nationwide. They failed because the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service fumbled the science and tried to play a quickie, and they lost in court. We're seeing the same thing with the Trump administration. And now, currently, the Biden administration has asked its agencies like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to review the rules passed during the Trump administration. And this is a quote, because the Biden administration wants all our decisions to be, quote, guided by the best science to improve public health and protect the environment, our environment. Nonetheless, their assistant director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, Mr. Gary Fraser, wrote a very short note back to the Biden administration saying that they were satisfied with their decision on the wolf. And this is after four out of five, maybe five out of five of the scientists that were asked to peer review the science for gray wolf delisting found major shortcomings. I was one of those official peer reviewers in 2019, and I was appalled by the state of the science used to justify delisting gray wolves nationwide. And then what got me even more surprised was in December of 2020, when the same Mr. Gary Fraser wrote to the California Fish and Game Commission, reassuring them that delisting wolves would not harm California's fledgling wolf population. And Mr. Fraser cited outdated and erroneous science that I had purposely, explicitly pointed out to the Fish and Wildlife Service as problematic science. That to me speaks to a willful ignorance of the science. And I really hope the Biden administration will change course, that wolves aren't something they can toss to the rural voters as throwing a bone to them. Wolves are a symbol of our nation's wildness and the health of our environment, which is being crippled by climate change and extinctions. Thanks.
Well, see, that was kumbaya. We agree.
Riddle me this. Wolves have lots of supporters, and they're passionate. And environmental groups, wildlife advocacy groups, have lots of members. Why don't Democratic politicians listen to us? Why do they think they can get away with ceding wildlife issues to rural communities and basically Republicans? It was kind of a rhetorical question.
Gotcha.
I wish you have an answer.
I wish I did know the answer to that, but that certainly doesn't mean I'm not going to keep at it and keep talking to them and make sure that they know. And I'm not trying to be totally bleeding heart liberal here, but children are being shot in their schools, right? And we can't seem to get the Democrats and the Republicans to take action on sensible gun control that the majority of gun owners support. So it's kind of the same there. Yes, we all support wolves. We're talking to them, yet there's not any movement. And I, personally believe, it always gets big, when you start getting into these hypothetical and rhetorical questions, is we've got to get the money out of politics. And in Wisconsin is no exception. So sure, they can listen to wolf advocates, but do I have as much money? I'll tell you what, my suit is a lot cheaper than the guy I go up against at the NRA at the state capitol. So, that kind of gets at some of the heart of that is, we're in a broken democratic system, and this wolf hunt is a perfect example, whether you want to go from national to state to game agency, of where we need to take the power back as people.
Yeah, I agree. And you've heard me speak about this before, Kevin. I think even on your radio show last time I was here, that it's an ancient principle in U.S. law, in common law, that our government is a trustee for us and for future generations. But currently, our government regulators don't act like trustees. They act like the service people for special interest groups and industry clients. And until we break that system and change it back to a trustee system where they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the assets that belong to all all the members of the U.S., current and future generations, until that fiduciary responsibility for our trust assets is reinstated. I don't expect reform. And wildlife is one of those trust assets. It doesn't belong to private property owners. It doesn't belong to the states even. They're just custodians with that fiduciary trust responsibility. And until that's enforced on a wide scale, I'm pessimistic about reform.
It's interesting about the notion of a public trust, because hunters really revere this thing called the North American model. And they often, the first pillar of that model that they point to is the idea that wildlife is a public trust. It doesn't belong to anyone. And going back to English common law, it doesn't belong to the king. It belongs to all of us. But it's often a difficult to go from that, saying that in terms of hunting, to say that all wildlife, not just game species, is a public trust, and all people, not just hunters, are the beneficiaries. And that seems a really hard leap for a lot of my hunter friends to make. And this is all very real to me today as we're talking, because we're in New Mexico, and there are two bills in the legislature currently which would address this notion of a public trust. One would change the mission of our wildlife agency to from managing wildlife as sort of this, resource for consumptive use, to all wildlife as a public trust with ecological and intrinsic value. And I got to say something you said earlier about mainstream hunters, Melissa. We have an extraordinary wildlife coalition in New Mexico, where our mainstream hunting groups are pretty, I'd say, ecological minded and democratically inclined. It's not, they're not there completely yet. They still want to. Well, anyway, we'll go there. But it's a good coalition, and we're all working together on these bills. The other bill is a constitutional amendment called the Green Amendment, which would actually put into our Bill of Rights section in our state constitution the language that you have a right to a healthy environment. Everyone does, and the state and every at every level of government is has a duty as a public trust, as a trustee of the public trust, including our animals, our fauna. So, these bills are having a tough time, I gotta say. They may or may not pass, but it's top of mind for me right now. So just throw that out there for our listeners.
Yeah, I just want to address your comment. And I'm sure that part of it, I'm certainly not saying all hunters are bad. I'm just we've seen a divide in the hunters. I've got hunter friends too. And I apologize to those if it seemed like I wasn't. Obviously, I've just come off a week of a senseless slaughter of, my favorite animal, where I feel like my voice wasn't heard. We don't seem to have that same type of coalition, but certainly hoping to build that here. And I hope the mainstream guys and ladies that I know in Wisconsin will come to us. We were always reaching out to them, trying to get them, to join with us. And, I really wish this myth that if we go after one type of hunting, we're going after all hunting, would just die, because it's a real blockade for all of us, like your bills were saying, to have access to a healthy environment and for us to restore our ecosystem in Wisconsin. So, I guess that was just my only comment.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Melissa. And objectively, there is a disconnect between mainstream hunters. In other words, people who mostly go out to put meat on the table, and hunting organizations that, ostensibly represent these hunters. The mainstream hunters will tell you, I don't like killing contests, but their organizations will never tell you that. The national hunting organizations are silent or oppose efforts to end killing contests. And the one notable exception, I have to say, was the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, which came out in favor of a ban on coyote killing contests in 2019. And to my knowledge, they are still the only sort of you know, mainstream hunting organization of any size that has come out against killing contests. We have to take a short break.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. We'll come right back to this after this short break. Stay tuned. Talking about, what were we talking about? We've talked about so many different things.
On the wildlife federations and building coalitions, I think is what we were discussing.
Right, yeah. And so you're not really happy yet with your coalition in Wisconsin?
Yeah, it just, we were talking about that a little bit, and it's so many hunters come up to me. I mean, I've served in Wisconsin Conservation Congress. I'm at all these DNR meetings that they're like, you know what? We don't like baiting bears. You know what? We don't really like hounding. I'm so sick of trespassing hounds. You know what? I don't support killing contests. But their organizations that they belong to won't take a stand because they're afraid to lose members. So I think, maybe with the younger people, that it's not that we shouldn't have coalitions of hunters, but that they need to not be afraid to speak out, because if they don't, my fear is, and their fear, then rightly so, is then it is going to be a bunch of people who don't hunt and are going to think all hunting is unacceptable. So I think they have a duty to preserve, what they do for the environment and what, putting food on the table. You need to speak up, and you need to speak up and build coalitions so we can stop these egregious forms of hunting, trapping, and hounding.
Yeah, I think some of the biggest obstacles are within the agencies themselves. And it sometimes seems to me that the staff at these agencies, and I don't want to stereotype or categorize everyone too broadly, but it does seem to be that the sort of prevailing worldview at these agencies is very much this idea that the highest use of wildlife is as a resource for consumption, and that the interest or well-being of the individual animal is really irrelevant. What matters is, population trends and what level of hunting pressure can a given population withstand. And that's always what the science is. The science is always about population ecology and not about animal intelligence or feeling. What do you think about that, Adrian? You're in academia.
Well, yeah, the scientific surveys support what you just said. Namely, there's a really important survey in Michigan that looked at agency attitudes towards lethal management, and found agency staff much more positive about lethal management than their constituents around them in the state. And recent work by Michael Manfredo and his colleagues out of Colorado State University shows that, say, take a state like Colorado, you only have 5% of people identifying as active hunters, but you have 70% of the public who recognize inherent value in wildlife, which means not their value for human use, but inherent to the animal itself, its interests. So there is a huge disconnect and a growing gulf between social norms and public attitudes towards wildlife versus the attitudes of agency staff. They're on a collision course. They're going to lose control through ballot initiatives. Talk about Colorado again, recent ballot initiative to reintroduce wolves, and other referenda around the country that take away control from their wildlife agencies. That's in part driven by a disconnect between the values of their constituents and the values of the staff until they start hiring in a more diverse way. And whether it's the diversity of worldviews or the diversity of life experiences, they've got to make a change or be steamrolled by the future, as far as I see it.
Interesting. So what's next in Wisconsin?
PTSD?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Once we get through that, what are Melissa, what are you and other groups planning to do in the short term and long term to try and prevent this from happening again?
Yeah, for the short term right now, is making sure we're working on some accountability actions. There are so many people and places where things went wrong that it is hard to pinpoint who's most accountable for what just happened. It's certainly, you know, we could certainly focus on those who did the actual killing, but, you know, clearly this shows some broken systems. And, you know, I think we do need to hold those who allowed this to happen. We need to hold them accountable. But we also need to be able to work with them in the future, because they're selling licenses for a wolf hunt in 2 weeks from now for the fall. So, you know, I think we're in a real bind, but luckily people like me who run on fueled on rage and anger over what happened, you know, I would tell people, you know, don't let it, you know, in any battle, you're going to have some losses, but we're going to win ultimately. And I think, you know, making sure we get representation on our natural resource board. We've got appointments coming up that where their terms are expiring, and making sure that you are heard. If you're sitting and yelling at the sky, the governor is not going to hear you. So, you know, one thing we're doing, definitely call in the governor, let them know that this is unacceptable wildlife management. So we're asking all of our advocates or anyone who cares about wildlife to do just that. And then, you know, lots of other meetings. And I'm sure there are talks of litigation, not that I know of, but talks of litigation going around about what can be done. But I think everybody is just kind of taking a deep breath, recovering, and then looking forward, you know, moving forward. How do we prevent this from happening again? And the only way that we can is to get involved. And hopefully this was the antithesis for a lot of people to do just that.
Right. A wake up call, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's the same thing with the wildlife killing contests that are taking place around the country. I mean, go ahead.
We tried to pass a bill here twice and both died in committee. So it's the same thing, you know, legislatively, we may not be able to do. Now, I was able to get a killing contest ban in my county, in Dane County in Wisconsin. So there's lots of different ways that we can do that, either, you know, by doing local action. You know, it doesn't always have to be, let's call Joe Biden and ask him to do something, which I'm getting a lot of. Yeah. Right now, where, you know, there are local things that you can do to protect wildlife, or at least protect them as much as you can from state and national policy. So, you know, I've never had more calls and emails, so that I'm less pessimistic than my colleague Dr. Adrian Trevis about the future of wildlife management, because frankly, and I don't mean offense, but the boomers are getting older. And, you know, I really want to say to the younger people, people that are young, 40 or under, you know, it's our time. And if we don't do something, we could stand to lose everything. And we're in real trouble with wolves. I don't think they can sustain another fall hunt. I just don't. I think the population will crash.
And I want to talk about some specific things that people can do, not just in Wisconsin, but in every state, including New Mexico. You have a natural resource board that oversees your Department of Natural Resources. Is that how it works?
We do. Yep. A 7-person board.
And how is the board constituted? How are the members selected?
They are appointed by the governor.
Any requirements?
Great question, because you have to be either in three have to be from above Highway 64. So essentially northern Wisconsin and southern Wisconsin. It's almost like two different states, it feels like sometimes. Three from north, three from south, one can be from anywhere in the state. But you have to have held a hunting and fishing license for 7 out of 10 years, or you have to have been involved in agriculture. So you have to be a farmer or and you also have to have letters of references from organizations that are not necessarily very friendly to the wolf. So you can get a nice letter from the Farm Bureau, for example, to prove those things. So the requirements are basically you have to be a hunter. You have to be a hunter, wow, or fisherman. Dr. Dave Clausen, a former Natural Resource Board member, he was a veterinarian. He's also a hunter. He's one of the really good guys. He's a really good mainstream guy. So I think if we can, you know, talk to our governor and say, listen, we aren't being represented on this natural resource board. that we could probably could make a difference with some of his appointments, and let him know that we will hold him accountable if we don't get any representation on those boards. So it's not that we could say, hey, we need a non-consumptive user. That's not possible. And we're not going to change that law with this state legislator. But maybe, like we were talking about, finding some of the more common ground, less extreme hunters to help us. I know people that have just buy a duck stamp. So that's, you know, if you buy duck stamps for 7 years and you could get on the board. So that's, you know, really pushing on to these game agency boards. And I think, Kevin, you're fighting the same fight there and everywhere across the country, is to change the makeup of these wildlife agencies.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today. I really want to thank our guests for being on the show today. Melissa Smith, Friends of the Wisconsin Wolf and Wildlife, and Adrian Treves, University of Wisconsin-Madison. I also want to thank Michael Allen, our volunteer engineer who makes the magic of radio happen for the show. And I want to thank all of you listeners out there for tuning in.
My pleasure, Kevin. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Kevin.